You can shop from anywhere doing pretty much anything. You might shop while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast. And however you shop, we all know and love the thrill of the hunt. But do you also know how to get the thrill of the best deals? Because Rakuten shoppers do. With Rakuten, they get the deals they love with the most savings and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Sephora, Nike, and even Expedia if you're looking to get some travel in. And getting cash back doesn't mean you have to miss out on sales because those can just be stacked right on top. It's easy to use and based on a simple idea. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back through PayPal or check. Download the free Rakuten app and never miss a deal. Or go to Rakuten.com to start getting the most bang for your buck. That's Rakuten.
Hey, it's Mae Whitman, and I play Frankie in the new Realm podcast, The Sisters. The Sisters is about a museum curator of medical oddities who investigates the origins of a mutated skeleton with two layers of bones. Soon, she uncovers an extraordinary mystery that connects her present with one family's tragic past in hauntingly dangerous ways. Listen to The Sisters wherever you get your podcasts.
So, hey, we've been making this podcast for over 2.5 years.
What?
Yep, thanks to listeners like you. And from the gate, people have asked us for merchandise or additional content or even some hang time with me and Scott.
That's weird.
It is. But we think we have a solution for you.
Yep, we are excited to announce that we have a new Patreon page.
Yeah, and you know how people are patrons of the arts? Well, in this case, we're the arts.
Hmm. And by becoming a Patreon, you'll get bonus content, access to outtakes that the general public will never see, extremely cool merch, and depending on what tier you get on, a monthly hang time with Laura and I.
Yep, and it all starts at just $5 a month.
That's nothing.
Right? Not per day, not per week. It's only $5 per month.
And you're guaranteed merchandise.
Yeah, oh, that's right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So click the link in the show notes to read about the different tiers and see what great stuff you can get. Become a podcast patron. Join our Patreon today at www.patreon.com/theonlyoneintheroom.
Hi, I'm Vari McKechnie, and I'm the only one who used to be an accidental daily drinker. There had been a couple of not so great hangovers, but there was no kind of moment of significance that had me stop. And I think that can almost make it harder to stop because you don't have this dire consequence of losing your kids or losing your job or a lot of the stories that we hear from other people who have then chosen to live an alcohol-free life. And I almost felt like an imposter because I didn't have this big, horrible story to tell. It was just a choice of this isn't good enough to continue and I want a better life. Everything was really good, but I wanted it to be great.
I'm probably one of the few people I know who still looks forward to my Sunday newspaper, not a digital copy that I read on my phone, but the real finger-staining, loud crinkling, section-by-section newspaper. The Sunday paper for me is a treat to be enjoyed while lounging in bed and sipping hot lemon water. So one day when we were going through all of the Only One stories that are being submitted to us, thank you for those, by the way. We love reading them. It was Scott's idea to record and release a few of them occasionally, but always on Sundays, and call them our Sunday edition. And because they're only 30 minutes long, our hope is that you can enjoy them while sipping your morning beverage, going for a walk, or even just enjoying a lazy Sunday at home. Please enjoy today's Sunday edition, and be sure to listen every Tuesday when we drop another brand new episode of The Only One in the Room. We are talking to Vari McKechnie, all the way from outside of Melbourne or in Melbourne, Australia?
Just outside of Melbourne, so about an hour outside of Melbourne on the beach.
Wonderful, wonderful. And we were just saying that It's winter here in Los Angeles where we are, and your kids just got out for summer holidays?
Yeah, that's right. They finish up school today, so we are about to head into hopefully a long, beautiful summer here, which still is hard to wrap my head around growing up in Scotland. This whole summer,
yes.
Summer Christmas thing still takes a little bit getting used to.
Yeah, I would imagine, because you don't get a lot of long summer in Scotland, do you?
No, you get about a day if you're lucky.
So I'm wondering, Veri, I know that you guys were on the longest lockdown of anywhere else in the world. Is that right?
Yeah, we hold that record, which is not necessarily a record that anyone wants to hold.
Yeah,
here in Victoria.
How long was that?
Was 253 days. Ooh. Over the whole kind of pandemic time. So yeah, it was pretty intense to deal with, you know, working from home and homeschooling the kids, and just seeing them struggle a little bit was hard, but hopefully, fingers crossed, we are kind of on the other side of that now. But it's definitely been an interesting time this last 2 years down here.
Sure. Yeah. Tell me, maybe it's different now, but during the lockdown, what was the first thing you did when you opened your eyes in the morning?
Good question. I actually started doing the 5 a.m. club. So I don't know if you're familiar with Robin Sharma's book, The 5 a.m. Club. So
no.
This whole idea of, you know, getting up at 5 a.m. and doing 20 minutes meditation, 20 minutes exercise, and 20 minutes reading. And I found that that was the best way to kind of keep me in the best mental and physical place during the lockdown.
I love
so
that.
I'm especially juggling homeschool. And with my boys, I have them 50% of the time. They are 12 and 10. So they still needed me to be quite present when they were doing their schoolwork from home. So in the weeks that I did have the boys, having that time to myself first thing in the morning just made such a difference to know that I'd kind of set the tone for the day. And it really kind of helped to create some rhythm and routine when there really was none. So yeah, I kind of went the opposite way from what a lot of people went. People were, you know, staying in their pajamas all day and sleeping till noon. And I was doing the opposite. I was getting up while it was still dark.
That's awesome. I love that. Are you still doing it?
Not so much now. I've kind of felt less tendency to do it now. I'm still just a natural early riser, but the 5 a.m.s are less frequent now.
Yes. Yeah. But that's really good. So hopefully nobody has to go into another lockdown. But if people do, this is something that you could do to be productive and keep your mind and body in shape. I love that.
Yeah.
And it sounds very doable.
Yeah. And just having that little kind of hour of time in the morning, for me, regardless of what unfolded for the rest of the day, and, you know, with two kind of little emotional human beings in the house, things could quite easily tip into a bit of a meltdown. But just having that solid hour at the start of the day kind of made me less wobbly throughout the day. So I was better to hold that space for them. And it wasn't,
like,
you know,
that
we didn't all fall down at the same time.
Yes. I love it. Well, thank you for that. I am Laura Cathcart Robbins. This is the only one in the room, but I'm never the only one in this room because, as usual, my boyfriend, producer, and co-host, Scott Slaughter, who I call Hun, is here as well.
Hi, honey.
Hey, Hun. So we are talking today to Veri McKechnie, and she's pretty incredible. I'm going to tell you a little bit about her. She's a podcaster, she's a writer, she's a coach, and a mentor for women who aren't alcoholics but want to break the cycle of accidental daily drinking. She teaches women how to release the handbrake of accidental daily drinking so they can drive their lives forward with more ease and flow and less resistance and hustle. She's originally from Scotland, as she said. It's called Australia Home since 2007. She lives by the beach with her two sons, Gabriel and Noah, and their adorable staffy, Stella, who I don't think I saw last time. Did I see Stella?
No, she may make a little appearance. You may hear her in the background. She follows the sunny spot around the room, so...
Oh, that's so cute. That's so cute. Tell me, Veri, how do you identify?
I identify as she, her, as a mother, as a daughter, and as a woman trying to navigate this world with a little bit of grace and a little bit of playfulness.
Nice, nice. I want to thank you for sending us the letter that you sent to put you on our radar, because as soon as both Scott and I read it, we were like, oh, we need this woman on the show. There are just too many good things that we want to talk about with you. So thank you for putting that out there. Not everybody does. And we read all our submissions for anyone who's listening. And if you have an incredible story like Vary's, we're going to want to talk to you too. So I love this. Scott and I both love this. You described yourself as an accidental daily drinker, someone who used to be an accidental daily drinker. You stopped drinking in July of 2018, right?
Yeah.
So I want you to tell me about the accidental daily drinking. Like, what was your relationship like with alcohol prior to July 2018?
When I look back, I could see now from this vantage point, which is always beautiful, you know, hindsight's a wonderful thing, but really looking back, I'd never really had a very stable relationship with alcohol, even since being a teenager. And then looking back even further from that, the relationship that my extended family had with alcohol and what I was kind of exposed to as a kid growing up wasn't something I would now deem to be healthy or necessarily a positive relationship. So it was just this ever-present part of my life. Obviously, as you mentioned, Laura, I grew up in Glasgow, in Scotland, and my dad was Scottish. My mum is an Irish background. And so this alcohol had just been this kind of ever-present part of my life. You know, you drank when you were celebrating, you drank with friends, you drank with family, you drank when you had a bad day. You know, there never seemed to be an occasion where drinking wasn't a good idea. This is something that kind of flowed just into my teen years and into early kind of adult years. And then I noticed this accidental daily drinking more so when I became a mother. So Gabriel was born in 2009. And I definitely recognize now that I fell into that category of needing, you know, the mummy juice, the wine o'clock, you know, this story that we're sold that we need alcohol in order to just survive motherhood, let alone thrive in it. So yeah, I definitely found myself for a couple of years when the boys were really little in that space of waking up in the morning and saying I wasn't going to have any wine, and then it would get to 5 o'clock and I'd be making dinner and inevitably the wine would make an appearance. And then the volume of that started to increase over time. So it was something I was always aware of, but became more aware of it once I became a mother, for sure.
Why did you say that you weren't going to have any wine that evening? What made you not want to drink wine?
It was the monotony of it and the reliance on it that I didn't want to have. I didn't want to rely on something outside of me to kind of take the edge off. And I felt like I was less and less present in my life, just as a mother, but also in general as well. So when Gabriel was born, I was made redundant from my design job when he was just a couple of months old. So at that time, I was trying to kind of nurture this newborn baby and find my place as a mother, which we're not really given a roadmap to do, and also to build my own business as well. So I was kind of trying to nurture this business and this baby. And for me, the wine was the thing that felt like that reward. It felt like, you know, that little bit of me time towards the end of the day. But I realized it was taking me further and further away from who I was. And it was almost like this kind of veil on all these areas of my life. And I didn't want it. And I went through this 24-hour cycle every day of being like, no, today is going to be a clear day. You're going to be fully present. And then it would default at 5 o'clock. And it was a seesaw back and forward. And that was a cycle that was difficult to break, but I knew that I didn't want to stay in that hamster wheel of not wanting to drink, accidentally drinking, not wanting to drink, accidentally drinking.
So, you know, it wasn't like you were really accidentally drinking. It wasn't like you thought it was a glass of water and then ended up being a glass of wine and you drank it. It was just that your intentions were set to not drink and then you're cooking and maybe you're using wine in whatever you're making, or you pour a glass while you're making it because that's what people do when they're cooking dinner, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. And that's the accidental part. You know, I would make this deal with myself in the morning I wasn't going to drink. And then before I knew it, there would be a wine in hand. Or I would go out with girlfriends for dinner and I would say that I wasn't going to drink. And then, you know, couple of glasses later, I'd realized that I'd kind of defaulted on that deal that I had made with myself. So I really wasn't having my own back at all. And so the accidental part, you know, was saying one thing and doing another.
Yeah. And you were married at this time?
Yeah, I was. And that was another part as well. You know, being at home with two young kids, there's not a lot of date nights happening. You're not able to go out and socialize as much as before. And all of our extended family were back in Scotland. So we had two little ones and we had the help of, you know, friends locally, but we didn't have grandparents and aunties and uncles necessarily to help. So date nights were, you know, a takeaway and a bottle of wine at home. So this was part of the whole default of it as well, that the only kind of escape to adulthood was through a bottle of wine typically.
Right. So it was like almost like an entrance to another world, right? You could leave kiddom and the just the chaos of that behind and slip into an adult moment with the bottle of wine.
Yeah.
And so you already kind of talked about this, but you're Scottish and now you're in Australia, two really big drinking cultures, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I didn't realize the drinking culture that Australia had until I moved here. And it was something that was quite surprising to me. You know, you would often see girls at 10 o'clock, you know, in a bar having a champagne breakfast and stuff. And champagne breakfasts aren't really what we do in Glasgow.
But
it seemed even more like sophisticated and elegant, you know, and so there was this kind of lure as, you know, this really lovely lifestyle that was wrapped up in alcohol all the time. So, yeah, definitely felt that I was kind of had the worst of both worlds when it came to that relationship with alcohol.
Sure. It's like it looks really glamorous, right?
Yeah. Totally.
So what could be wrong with that?
Yeah. And that's what makes it really hard to stop, because you feel it's not just the alcohol you're giving up, but everything that that's associated with. You know, it's ironic that where I live now on the Mornington Peninsula is like wine country. And there's something like, you know, 150 wineries just in this small area. And people come from all over Australia to visit this area for its beautiful wine. And so, you know, the temptation to want to have these beautiful lunches, you know, with your partner, with your girlfriends, you know, it looks beautiful and it looks very sophisticated and something that we should aspire to. But I think there's a pretty dark undercurrent that kind of weaves through that this idea that to have any sort of social connection with our friends or our family and our loved ones, that alcohol has to be this ever-present part of it. And that's definitely one of the things that made it difficult to make that decision in the initial days. You know, those fears of how am I going to connect with friends? You know, when I decided to stop drinking, I had separated and divorced from my boy's father and was in a long-term relationship at that time. So, you know, there was lots of questions about what's this going to mean for our relationship, because, you know, going out and going for meals and sharing a bottle of wine was something that we often done together. And that relationship ended probably 18 months after I stopped drinking. And whilst it wasn't the main reason, it definitely played a part in that. So there was definitely a shift in relationships and friendships, which was for the better. But at the time, it made it really difficult to make that decision, because I think culturally, alcohol is just this ever-present part of these ways that we connect with the people that we love and the way that we have fun as adults.
Right. So you stopped drinking before you were divorced?
No. So I divorced and I was still drinking then. And then I was in a relationship and I stopped.
Oh, then you were in a different relationship. I'm sorry. Right,
yeah.
Right.
So I stopped then. Yeah.
This is fascinating to me. Tell me about dating. You found yourself single for the first time in a very long time, in your 30s, right?
Yeah.
And dating with two young kids is already a whole thing, right?
Right.
And I told Scott I was excited about this conversation because I have a lot of girlfriends who don't drink now that are sober the way that I am, and they're dating. For some people, it's a non-starter if they're not drinkers. Like, they're just not interested in dating someone who doesn't drink. And for other people, it's still like they get to the date and it's like, what do I do with my hands and what do I order? So tell me about your experience with it.
Well, it was definitely a fun little experiment. So I had ended this longer term relationship that I was in. I had stopped drinking about 18 months before that. So I wasn't in those really kind of early days of, you know, really feeling really awkward and lost in those social situations. And I decided to dive into the world of online dating, which was the first time I'd ever done that, because I'd met my ex-husband when I was 18 years old. So, you know, online dating wasn't a thing back then. And so it was really interesting. So for me, the approach that I took with it was that I was open to meeting someone, going on dates with someone who drank. I didn't have a problem with someone else still drinking alcohol, obviously within reason, you know.
Right.
But it wasn't a non-negotiable for me. And so I didn't feel the need to kind of lead with that, you know, in the very first, you know, exchange or in my bio or anything like that. Because for me, it really wasn't a huge part of my identity or my personality. You know, it was just this thing that I happened to not do anymore. And that's really the approach that I've had with it. I don't identify personally as someone who's in recovery, or even the word sober doesn't feel like a match for me. Just living alcohol free or choosing to not drink feels more aligned for me, because it just doesn't have that huge big part of my attention. And that was definitely an intentional thing that I chose early on. So for me, I was happy to date, but it's interesting people's responses when you do say that you don't drink. Some people, they're totally fine with it. And as you said, other people just don't know what to do with it, especially people who do have this kind of constant relationship with alcohol and do drink regularly. They mm-hmm. don't know what to do when you say you don't drink. And I remember there was this one occasion where I'll share this one story with you, because it was too funny to not tell. And my girlfriends loved when I came back from these dates. They're like, tell me. They're all, you know, married with kids, and they're like, right, give us a story. And I remember going on this date, and it was on a Sunday night, and we had been chatting for the week before, and we were meeting in this pub in the city. It was a beautiful sunny day, so we were going for something to eat. And so I get there at 6 o'clock in the evening, and he turns up 10 minutes late, completely hungover from the night before. Before we even sit down, he's told me how much money he spent the night before, which was ridiculous, how he'd been out for 16 hours, how he had smashed his phone and lost his bank card. And if I could have just stood up and walked away, I would have in that moment. But I thought, this is going to be a really great story to tell. So I stayed. And so the waitress came up to take our order, and he ordered a glass of wine. And I had said, he said, do you want to share a bottle of wine? And this was the moment I was telling him that I didn't drink. So I said, oh, I actually don't drink. And he just laughed at me. And I thought, it's not a great way to start a date, laughing at your date, you know?
Right.
So he laughed.
Did he think you were kidding?
I think he did, because then he went on to say, oh, are you just going to order like a soda? And I said, yes, please. And can I have some lime in that?
Right.
And that was the start of the date. It didn't take an upward trajectory from there. It kind of leveled there.
That was the highlight of it.
Exactly. But it's just really interesting how uncomfortable other people can feel in that space. And I know that for me, you know, but my work as a coach and with the people I work with, it's all about being willing to sit in those uncomfortable situations, being willing to sit in that space that feels awkward, you know, and not running out of the room. And so, yeah, so those moments I really took as an opportunity to just be more of who I am and allow other people to feel awkward and not feel the need to save them and make them feel less awkward for me, just simply being myself and being who I am. But yeah, it was definitely a deal breaker for other people, and it wasn't a deal breaker for me, which, yeah, made to some very interesting dates along the way.
Absolutely. We're going to take just a quick break to tell you about a cool new product that Scott and I discovered. And we'll get back to our guest's amazing Only One story in just a minute.
As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch. And organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, so wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/realm.
Do you like science fiction? I'm Carrie Bechet, and if you loved movies like Arrival or Interstellar, then you're going to want to check out my podcast, Hypothetical. On Hypothetical, we tell speculative sci-fi stories interwoven with real science. New episodes every Tuesday, available wherever you get podcasts.
Are you more aware now that you're alcohol-free of how often and how much of a part of our culture alcohol is? Like, you know, I get on the plane and I'm offered a drink. I sit down at a table and they come over to offer me a cocktail. When I go to someone's home, they offer me a glass of wine. Like, it's, there isn't anywhere that I go that I'm not offered alcohol on a regular basis. But I became much more aware of that once I stopped drinking. Do you have that awareness?
Absolutely. And it was certainly something that I noticed when I stopped. The way that this is framed, particularly around people who identify as female, this was a huge one for me, and even more so mothers in that space. The advertising and just the narrative, and I know a lot of it is done in jest, and it's, you know, and it's quite funny, but it's also not funny at the same time, you know, like different t-shirts or, you know, coffee, takeaway coffee cups that, you know, that says something about having wine inside and things like that. You know, I know, I can appreciate a good joke, but I think it's often quite detrimental to people who are struggling with their relationship with alcohol and they're exposed to a lot of this kind of content. But certainly realizing just how prevalent alcohol was in every aspect of our lives was a huge realization for me after I decided to stop drinking. And this idea that you don't have as good a time if you're not drinking alcohol was really fascinating to me, because what is in my glass, whether it is sparkling water or vodka, should make no difference to other people and their enjoyment of an event. But it seems to really matter. And I noticed a lot of people, you know, would really try and encourage me to have a drink. You know, they would say, but it's my birthday, or it's your birthday, or it's Friday, or it's Wednesday, or whatever, you know. And it was really interesting. And what I came to realize was the people who were quite adamant about the fact that I should have a drink were people who were questioning their own relationship with alcohol as well. And I could see that in friends and family members who felt quite uncomfortable with the fact that I wasn't drinking, because I wasn't someone that even necessarily identified as being an alcoholic before I stopped drinking. And I'm sure other people wouldn't have put that label on me either. But to them, if I'm choosing to not drink, if I deem to have a negative enough relationship with alcohol that I want and need to remove it from my life, and they drink more than me, then what does that say about them?
Right. You know, and you're a threat then.
Yeah. And I noticed that in some relationships, you know, there was more space in some relationships for a little while. And a lot of them have, that gap has closed with a lot of those friends. But I allowed that to happen. And as difficult as it was at the time, I knew that it wasn't necessarily about me, but it was mirroring things and them that they perhaps felt a little uncomfortable with. And so I allowed some space in some of those friendships, and most of them have come back. And I think that it's, it's often not about us, but it's about what that is bringing up in other people that can be really uncomfortable.
Well, I mean, you said a mouthful there a couple of times, and I'm wondering if that's the kind of thing, because you're talking about the stigma, but also people's own discomfort with people who aren't drinking as well. You know, Scotty and I, we eat plant-based. We don't eat any animal products. And we find the same thing with that. People are like, well, you don't eat anything? But what about this? What about that? Wouldn't you just have, you got to taste this. And it's like, no, we don't. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and again, to your point, why should they be made uncomfortable by our personal choices. We're still there. We're still having fun. We're still engaged. Mm-hmm. But it creates this kind of wall of discomfort.
Yeah. And what I decided was that I would rather, given the choice, I'd rather have other people feel uncomfortable and disappointed in me than feel uncomfortable and disappointed in myself. And really that is what it boiled down to for me. I can't stop other people and how they feel about me not drinking, but as long as I feel good in my decisions, that's really all that matters. And that's not from a place of, you know, being really self-centered, but it's kind of looking after myself more than caring so much what other people think that I'm willing to do things that don't feel aligned for me.
Yeah. And that must be something that you take into your mentoring, right? Into your coaching, because your mentoring is, from what I can tell, and correct me if I'm wrong, but it's geared toward women who are not, is it just women?
The majority is women. There's a few men that I work with, but yes, certainly
okay.
The majority.
So people who aren't identifying as alcoholics, but do want to live an alcohol-free life. Mm-hmm. And what does that look like? And is there even like a group for that or a category for that? And what is, you know, and how do you do that? And then here's you, right? Who made that choice and now you're doing it. So tell me a little bit about that.
It's really interesting because often people find themselves in that gray area between not wanting to continue the relationship with alcohol that they have, but also not identifying as someone who is an alcoholic, you know. And for me, there was no rock bottom that led me to stop drinking. You know, there had been a couple of messy nights out. There had been a couple of not so great hangovers, but there was no kind of moment of significance that had me stop. And I think that can almost make it harder to stop because you don't have this kind of, you know, dire consequence of losing your kids or losing your job or losing your license or you know, a lot of the stories that we hear from other people who have then chosen to live an alcohol-free life. And I know that was true for me when I was reading, you know, a lot of books from these incredible women who had these real epic rock bottoms and who had gone on to create these incredible lives and share their stories. And, you know, that was the first point where you know that your relationship has to change when you start seeking out these kind of books and podcasts and what have you. But for me, it was difficult. And I almost felt like an imposter because I didn't have this big, horrible story to tell of, you know, losing my kids or, you know, losing my business or some really scary health issue. It was just a choice of this isn't good enough to continue and I want a better life for me and for my boys going forward. Everything was really good, but I wanted it to be great. And that's a lot of the women that I work with are in that space of like, life looks really good on the outside. And a lot of people tell them how good their life is and they're very appreciative and thankful for what they have. But they have, as you said at the beginning, this handbrake on their life that is alcohol and it's keeping them stuck. And they're not able to, you know, go for that promotion or to, you know, leave a relationship or start another relationship or grow the relationship they're in or have those relationships with their children because they have this daily handbrake of alcohol. And what I'd see happening with so many of my clients is that it has them trying really, really hard. Like there's lots of hustle, there's lots of grind. People are doing these 30-day no drinking challenges, but then getting it hard on the other side. And so for me, I wanted to make alcohol just a non-issue in my life, for it to just be something that didn't take up any of my energy or any of my thought energy as well. I didn't even want to have to consider it. So for me, you know, the idea of drinking in moderation just took up way too much brain space. And so I see that with a lot of my clients as well. It's like they don't want to have to add another thing to have to try and juggle. And so that really, I think, is that middle ground that not very many people were talking about, where you're not an alcoholic, you don't need to get sober, but it's a choice that you want to make to take your life from being good to really great.
I love that you make that distinction. And I think it's really important for that swath of people that you're talking about who might be afraid of the stigma if they didn't have someone, like I said, that's gone ahead of them that says, this is how I did it, and I can, you know, show you how that works for me. And I think that's really important. Tell me how people can, if someone is, first of all, because this is dry January, when people are listening to this.
Okay.
So a lot of people who are sober curious might already be, you know, 2 weeks in to an alcohol-free life, and maybe they feel good about it and want to continue. How can they find you and how can they get that started?
You can find all of the ways that I work with clients on my website, which is just barrymckechnie.com. And I'm also on Instagram as well. So I'm just at Vari McKechnie on Instagram. So those are the two main places. I do have a free masterclass about how to opt out of drinking without missing out, which is often a really good first resource for people who find themselves in that kind of messy middle area. So for anyone who is curious about what a life without alcohol might look like, but like me are fearful that it's going to be really boring, because I mean, I really was like the least likely person to give up alcohol, because I thought it looked boring. I thought it looked like a really sad, lonely life. And the opposite has been true for me. There's so much more play in my life. There's so much more curiosity, so much more fun as a mother to my sons. I'm just so much more interested. We think that we become uninteresting when we give up alcohol, and then we realize that all we did was go to different places and drink alcohol with different people. Like, we didn't really do anything. It was all that interesting. So my life is definitely so much richer because of that, but we don't think that that's possible. So for me, I want to be that example of how you can live an alcohol-free life, and it can be way more fun and way easier than you imagine if you're in that messy middle area.
Beautiful, beautiful. Thank you so much, Vari. It's been so great talking to you. So excited about this episode. I want to hear back from our listeners about their experience with it. Thank you.
You're so welcome. Thanks so much, guys, for having me on. It's been lovely to chat.
Thank you, Vari.
Thank you so much for listening. The Only One in the Room is produced by the creative genius that is Scott Slaughter and edited by the uber-talented polymath Christina Barcy and her team at Avant House Productions. Hey, you're still listening? Good. Please subscribe right now while you're thinking about it, quick, before you forget. And be sure to like and leave us a review of the show. Want to connect with some other Only One listeners? Be sure to join our private Only One in the Room Facebook group, or check out Patreon on our website for exclusive content that you won't find anywhere else. And do you have an Only One in the Room story that you'd like to share? Please send it to theonlyonepod@gmail.com.
Are you thinking about getting into Dungeons & Dragons? Maybe you're looking to expand your horizons as a DM or a player. If that's the case, then it's time for you to check out The Dungeon Cast, the best D&D podcast out there that helps you passively learn all about the game just by listening. Join co-hosts Will and Brian as they break down the lore of a rich multiverse 50 years in the making in a lighthearted and beginner-friendly way. They cover everything from character creation options to tips for dungeon masters. There's something for everyone, no matter how long you've been playing TTRPGs. Get inspired while learning all about the unique planes of existence. Get the in-depth knowledge you need to help your combat encounters feel impactful, or learn about the origins and pantheons of every race and class the game offers. No stone is left unturned as every edition of the game is explored and explained in a way that benefits players of all different levels of experience. You can expand your TTRPG horizons in a way that's as entertaining as it is educational just by listening. All you have to do is go to your favorite podcast app or YouTube and search for The Dungeon Cast.